That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hey everyone, I am That Money Guy. This is That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio talking to you about everything, the subject of money. So let me give you a little bit of a breakdown of the show for those of you that are new here. For those of you that aren't new, apologise and do bear with. So on this show, we do a few things. We're here to discuss, obviously, everything personal finance. But what I like to do first is break down a little bit about what's going on within the economy so that you actually understand how it's relevant to you. Because, you know, some people just say the news is completely disconnected. It's completely boring. I disagree. There are things that we can learn from it and there are things that are important to know. And then, of course, every week I get joined by two incredible guests. So coming up this week, we have Louise Thomas. She is a motor insurance expert from Confused.com. Ever heard that website? Confused.com? And following her, we've got Anna Sophie Hartvigsen, the co-founder of Female Invest. So if you are a female and you're looking to understand more about personal finance, then she has built and is currently building an incredible community and knowledge base to help an entire demographic of the world get more interested in the topic of money. But like I said at the start, what we do at the very beginning is talk about the economy. And just to help you understand, how are things in the news actually relevant to what is going on in my life? And I want to share with you a few stories. Well, firstly is the one that was probably on the top of every personal finance radar at the start slash middle of last week, and that was the inflation rate. So the inflation rate came down to 3.2% 1 year to March. And the things that kind of came down in cost that helped bring that inflation down number is things like meat, crumpets, chocolate biscuits, furniture, and household items. So those are the key things that bring the price down. However, petrol and diesel prices were going up. So as you can see, there are a few factors pushing things up and pushing things down. But the month before it was 3.4%. It's now 3.2%. Now, I want to stress something really important here when it comes to inflation. Now, you're going to hear commentators saying inflation is coming down. Inflation might be coming down, but prices are still going up. How does that work? How does that marry up? So as long as inflation is a positive number, all that means is that the price from last year compared to this year, it's things are going upwards. What they mean by inflation coming down is they mean the speed at which things are increasing is decreasing. I know, very confusing, but let me give you an example. So last year, inflation, let's say, there were highs of about 10% from this time last year. That means that, let's say, we took something that cost £1, a loaf of bread. 1 year later, so to 2023, at this time last year, it would have gone up to £1.10. And then, fast forward to this point, it's only 3.2%. It's only going up to £1.14. So you see, instead of that 10p jump, it's now only 3 and a bit p. So it's still going up in price, it's just not going up as quickly. Very important, but it's going in the right direction. We want to try and hit that 2% target of inflation to keep things going up in price, but slowly and steadily. And that's just something for you guys to know about inflation. The next thing that I want to discuss, because this is going to become really relevant when Louise comes on later and speaks about all things motor insurance, and I feel like it's super relevant, because I don't know how many of you sitting at home right now are thinking to yourself, my insurance premium on my car. You might be 18 and just started driving for the first time, or just, you know, been driving for years, but the prices feel like they are absolutely crazy right now. Like, I remember last year, my policy, this isn't even now when things are heating up even more, and I'll tell you what's going on in the news, but I remember last year, I got charged £1,200. That was double the price from the year before on my car insurance renewal. So what's going on in the news, and why am I even speaking to you about car insurance premiums in the first place? Well, apparently, car insurance premiums are now averaging for new policies, almost £1,000. That is crazy to pay £1,000 on car insurance. Like, what are you driving, a Ferrari or a Bugatti? I know that they're probably more, but still, for like the average person, paying £1,000 on car insurance is nuts. And I'm going to share with you some hacks on how to lower it down as well, and that's going to be part of our segment when the next guest comes in. But what's been going on? So between kind of people are actually at this point in time having to make a decision as to whether they want to buy car insurance and pay for car insurance or put food on the table. Now, you know that when a society is kind of discussing those two points, getting insurance on a vehicle versus, you know, food on the table, there is something wrong. So what are the numbers? Well, there's some research that's been done by Confused.com, which is great because our guest coming on later represents and works for Confused.com. But this research has shown that the average cost of car cover is now £941. That is 43% up over 12 months. That is nuts. 43%, £284 higher than the average price 12 months ago. And that isn't even the craziest thing, because back in January just gone, that is January 2024, that price was at £995. So it's actually come down 50 odd quid since then. And what's going on? Why is car insurance so crazy right now? Well, there's a few kind of reasons that are being quoted by car insurance providers. The main ones are rising costs of spare parts, secondhand cars, and labor inside of repair shops. I don't know. I mean, they're probably right. They're doing the analysis. They know what's going on. But it just feels like, come on, like 43% year on year. Like inflation's at like, what, 3.2%? Why can't we keep in line with that? I don't know how you're feeling, if you've experienced this yourself, but I'm fairly certain that pretty much everyone is feeling this kind of car insurance stuff. So like we said, it's £54 down from the start of January, but that doesn't mean that it's anywhere near down. It's still up crazy. There were some other stats that I found that if you drive a car in inner London, car insurance last quarter was up £434 year on year. And somewhere like Northern Ireland saw it go up by £264 year on year. And that means that if you're a young driver, now hear this stat, if you're a young driver, the average annual cost for running your car currently sits at, including things like, you know, fuel, petrol, insurance, maintenance, £3,043, which costs more than the car that I currently drive. Imagine maintaining a car, on average, costing more than the amount that my actual car physically is worth. I don't know, it feels a little bit nuts to me. And not just that, almost half, this is a really interesting thing, half of customers that received a higher quote, so they can, you know, your insurance is due, this is your new price, it's higher, they managed to save an average of £90 simply by switching provider. And that's going to be the fun part of our guest later today. We're going to go back and have a bit of a discussion about this idea that car insurance are crazy right now, and some hacks, some tips and tricks as to how you can bring them down. I mean, I'll give you a few like sneaky ones. The idea of, you know, don't just auto renew. Make sure you're checking your provider quite a few weeks before that actual renewal date happens. You do things like adding a second driver, as long as they are actually driving it. So like I said, there are a lot of things you can do, but I don't want to kind of spoil it for you just yet, because we've got a guest to talk about it in general. But I will give a bit of an anecdote, and I'm probably going to bring this up later. So earlier I told you that my car insurance was, I think, £600 3 years ago. For context, I drive a Renault Clio 2011. Yes, I speak about all things personal finance, which means I still drive the same car that I did when I was 19 years old. Because when it breaks down, I'll move to a new car. But for now, you know, it's paid off. There's no car payments coming out. It's a great like money-saving hack for me. That thing takes me from A to B. For now, it does the job. But a year later, my car insurance renewal came in at £1,200. And I don't know, like, I wasn't a bad driver. I don't even think I had a black box in the car at the time. Maybe I do drive a little bit too quickly, but always, obviously, under the speed limit. Duh. But why was it coming up that much? I gave them a call, and they said things. I think they said that the main reason it had gone up was that the streets where I lived were dangerous. Like, I don't know where they thought I was living, but, like, my car had been fine for the past 3 or 4 years. I don't know why the streets where I lived all of a sudden were dangerous. Anyway, they were sticking to that line. So what did I do? I went onto a comparison website, ones like Confused.com that are coming on later. I literally Googled, like, put in all of, like, the exact same criteria as to what my current car insurance provider was offering for £1,200. And it came in saying, the cheapest one for you is £456 or something like that. I don't know. I'm not exact, but it was around basically 450 quid. £450. I called up my current provider, said, hey, you're charging me £1,200. I can do it for £450. Within 5 to 10 minutes, they were down to £500. It was literally that simple. That is a huge amount of money saved from one phone call. So it's just a bit of context to the story that we're going to be discussing later, and one that I found really interesting. And one other interesting story that's been happening in the news that a lot, some of you might be interested, some of you might moan when I say this, but the Bitcoin halving. So Bitcoin halving was an event that was very monumental, I would say, in the cryptosphere. I'm not really like so involved in the cryptosphere, but I am obviously that money guy. So I try to keep on top of all these things. That actually happened on, where are we now? 2 days ago, I believe. So it happened on Friday. The Bitcoin halving. And that all that does is it cuts the rewards that you get for mining crypto. So people are literally out there mining, not digging with a shovel, but they're online looking for or like harvesting crypto to get more into the you know, ecosystem. And the reward they get is cut in half, which kind of cuts their intensity to supply it. Supply drops, demand and is the same, price goes up. That's the kind of general thought process. So did we see a massive spike? Well, we saw a small spike in the price of crypto. I think it's gone up maybe 5% since then. The crypto market, like we know, is really volatile. So 5% isn't volatile whatsoever when talking about this kind of thing. And this halving happens every 4 years. So that's something also to be aware of. And the last time it happened, I want to check my statistics are right here. But the last time there was a crypto halving, it was valued at around 8,000. And by a year later, it was valued at 8,600. 1 year later, it was valued at $56,000. Currently, crypto sits at $66,000. So keep an eye. Maybe this time next year, we'll be looking back and thinking to ourselves, oh, it did happen again. But the consensus is actually thinking that it's not going to shoot up that much. All I would say off the back of kind of this whole discussion around crypto is it's a really volatile asset. And it's something that I would not kind of say diving into unless you're really, really happy to kind of dive into the detail and understand it yourself. Don't jump on phases. Don't jump on fads and all that kind of stuff. It can definitely has the potential. And a lot of investors are kind of looking at it as a small, very small. We're talking like less than 5% part of their portfolio. But like I said, always do your own research. This isn't financial advice. And please, please, please be aware that money can go down as well as up and crypto is super volatile. And that is everything when it comes to the news. So I hope I've interested you a little bit. You can see kind of what's going on, what's relevant, and you can start to understand that things going on week do affect you on a daily basis. So this is the place to keep up to date with all things, up to date with the economy. And straight after this little break, I will be speaking to Louise Thomas, motor insurance expert at confused.com, to hopefully give you some tips to bring that insurance premium all the way down, because I ain't paying $1,200.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
FUBAR Radio presents What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to, because when I was drinking and dating, you know, like, you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking, is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, you know, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it, but for my confidence I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it. Like, I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one, and then I'd meet them like a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common. What was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Heartbreak, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip that actually we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one. Hang on. You know, he's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take out I don't have £1,000. You take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs.
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling. So for me to place us out there would be pretty, you know, pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke. And I said I would because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral standing.
We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. I am That Money Guy, and as promised earlier, I'm not just going to hit you with the bad news about car insurance. I'm going to bring experts in to actually help us level up and understand more and see what our kind of solutions and ways to solve the problem are. So like I said, these are the statistics right now. Year on year, we are up 43% with the average car insurance premium new policy coming in at £941. Now, luckily, I'm not an expert on this, but my guest is Louise Thomas, motor insurance expert at Confused.com. Welcome, and thank you for joining us here today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to have some fun here.
Save money?
Yeah, exactly. That's the job of Confused.com, right? So hopefully, what we can do is leave people listening here today not feeling like, oh my God, when's my policy coming up? But instead thinking, I'm ready for it. Bring it on, because we're going to get it down. So I want to ask to start with, I gave a few reasons according to kind of the news article we were looking at as to why the average cost of car insurance was going up so quickly. But from someone that's living it and breathing it, what is going on? Why is it crazy right now?
It certainly feels crazy, doesn't it? Like, we had this brief moment during the pandemic where, as bad as the world was, car insurance premiums did go down because there was nobody on the road, really. So these increases feel even wilder now. And some of it is we're back on the road. There's more cars, more crashes, more claims. The other thing is, as I'm sure you know, everything is more expensive. And the cost of claims, the cost of like repairing cars, having to replace cars, which all have kind of snazzy and new technology now, is so much more expensive for insurers that that's just being passed on to drivers. So that, along with supply chain issues and, like I said, people driving more expensive cars for the large part, is driving premiums through the roof.
Okay, so here's a question that I feel like if you have no idea about this topic, you would ask. Do I need insurance? Can I drive without it if it's so crazy expensive?
Absolutely, yes. You definitely need insurance. It's the law.
I don't know if we need a B at this point. that's good enough on its own.
Even if you think about it from like the cost, I'm saying the price of insurers with their massive legal teams, big banks, network of repairers, they have to pay out loads for a claim. Can you imagine if you were driving a car and you had an accident and you were responsible for all of those costs? Like, that's not really an option anyone wants to think about.
Yeah, I like it. A, it's the law. And B, like, it's just not worth not having. You're right. Like, getting into a car crash and having to pay the crazy amounts. Like you said, the cost of things going up, the price of the actual repair is probably worth a lot more than the price you're paying on car insurance. Again, I've got a very like young audience, and I think that the fact is young people pay more when it comes to insurance, especially new drivers for the first time. But even people that feel like they've been driving for a few years still feel like they're being hit by this young tax. And you know what? Like, I mean, I thought when I was 20, in my early 20s, that I was the best driver in the world. But why was I being like kind of penalized for that? And haven't crashed ever, by the way. That's also a good thing to say in my kind of 10, 15 years of driving. But why do young people pay more?
It is really frustrating, especially if you feel like you're a great driver, you know, you pass your test with flying colors, never had a claim. But ultimately, it is down to the risk of like everybody in your peer group, because the risk is shared amongst everyone. And young drivers are statistically more likely to have more crashes, they're less experienced. Those claims they make tend to be quite expensive. So it just means that all young drivers are kind of sharing the cost, which feels unfair. That's just the way insurance works. And it must be really frustrating, especially if you're, you know, in your early 20s now. If you're 22, you're paying more than you did when you were 17 because of all the factors we spoke about earlier. Even though you've got more experience, you've probably got some no claims bonus. But sadly, the way the insurance works now, it is just expensive to be young.
Yeah, it feels nuts. I mean, I feel like we're seeing case studies come out, people being quoted more than the actual value of their car, which is a bit confusing. I mean, can you explain how that works? Because let's say, you know, I write off the value of my car. Why am I paying more in a year to insure it? Is that something that can even happen? Should it be happening? Or is that something that you should be aware of and calling out your insurance provider for?
It's definitely something that you should be aware of. I think what you need to remember is the cost of a claim is not just the cost of your car. Like, depending on, like, you know, who's at fault and the scenarios, like, you could be driving a really affordable little runaround that doesn't cost too much to replace, but you could crash into a Lexus and write that off as well. And you're also responsible for repairing that or replacing that. And that's why your insurance premium might be more worth more than your car. But there are definitely ways to get your premiums down, but there's no getting around the fact that it is expensive to be a young driver or an old driver, any driver now.
Just insurance, it's just expensive to drive. And I always like to kind of caveat this, because we won't dive into this area, but especially if you live somewhere like London, a really busy metropolitan, I mean, your first thought should always be, is it cheaper for me to even not own a car in the first place? You know, just utilize taxis and transport and public transport as well. We're really a well-connected city. And obviously the way that it costs, I think I said it's over £3,000 now for a young person to maintain and like cover an entire car's cost, aside from physically paying for the car, in a year. Just do the maths. I like to kind of leave that in there as like a little a nugget of wisdom. But you mentioned there are ways to bring down costs. We like to be helpful here at That Money Show and not just talk about the doom and gloom. So one in particular, before we dive into a few various ways that a lot of people keep asking me, is can I just add my parents' name? Like, they're more experienced drivers. Can I just put them on the policy? Or can I make them kind of the named driver on my policy? Because that will make the price drop, but I feel like there's more to know than just doing it.
Yes. So you have to be careful about how you do that. So 100%, have a think about if there's any chance your parents are going to be driving your car, add them as named or additional drivers to the policy. We've seen an increase in like our customers and young drivers doing that over the last year because it brings the price down. Like, we know that works, but you just have to be careful that you don't do it the wrong way around. If you drive the car the most, you can't put your mum or dad as the main policy holder, because that's not an accurate representation, and that's called fronting, and that can invalidate your policy. Then you go into all those risks of you have to pay for everything, your insurance is invalid, and we don't want to run into that. That scenario for any drivers. The other thing is, you're not going to build up no claims bonus. Like, if your parents drive your car claims free, you're not building up your own discount, and it is a bit of a short-term pain for long-term gain. So make sure they're only additional drivers, but it's definitely one of the easiest ways for young people to get the cost of their insurance down.
Okay, brilliant. We've answered that one. Listen, if you want to put them as the named driver, it has to be because it's their car that you're secondhand driving. If the other way around, doesn't work. Let's not break the law here, people. Very important one to know. And like you said, it's not worth the risk because it's going to invalidate your policy, and it's going to basically, you paid a whole year for insurance, you end up having to use it, gone out the window right there and then. So let's talk about some factors of decreasing car insurance, because I know there's actually a huge amount that can make a huge difference. And I'd love for you to kind of share the key difference makers that people can take.
Yeah. So obviously the number one thing is shop around. Don't just take your renewal for granted. You're almost definitely going to find a better deal with a new insurer if you swap. We see like over 3/4 of people who shop around save money. That could be £90, could be £100. You're going to save some money. But my number one tip is about when you do this. Like, we're all super busy, but don't leave it until the last minute. If you shop around, like, around about 3 weeks before, so like 21 days, you've got a few days either side of that, you can save hundreds of pounds on your insurance versus doing it the day before it's due. So that is the number one thing I would say to anybody. So young, old, whoever, be organized, put a diary reminder in your phone now for 3 weeks in advance, and you'll save so much money by doing that.
I've got it in my calendar. It is. I think I've got it 4 weeks before, just so I can start to, you know, do the research and prep myself for the call. But I think you're right. The data shows that if you do it 3 weeks before, you will, there will be a saving guaranteed. The amount can be, like you said, monumental.
Yeah. I spoke to a colleague of mine earlier who's young, he's in his 20s. has had a couple of incidents, but he saved almost £300 when he shopped around 3 weeks in advance. He went back and did a quote the day before just to see the difference. So it's huge how much money that you can save by being prepared. Okay. But there's other things when you're actually filling out your quote, looking through the form, like make sure you put the details in accurately. Like don't overestimate your mileage because you can't think about how much you actually drive. Don't underestimate it. Like be accurate with the details you're providing. And there's a few things that if you can afford it, and I appreciate that it's expensive, you should consider doing. So it's cheaper to pay in one go. If you're looking at £3,000 as an 18-year-old, maybe not the case. But if you do have that money, like you'll save all of that interest. Pay it in one go if possible. And have a look at the excess on your policy. Some of it's going to be dictated by the insurer, but some of it is the voluntary excess. So you can choose that. And you often find if you increase it, you bring down the cost you actually have to pay for your insurance premium. You've just got to make sure that you can afford to pay that amount if you do need to make a claim. So it's one to be careful of, but it's a good way to save money on your policy.
I love these. And I've got a few more to throw at you that I've seen online that I just want to be made aware as to whether they're okay to do and whether they'll actually work. Number one, I heard if you're on the electoral roll, that actually might have an impact on your car insurance premium. Have you heard that one before?
Yeah. I have. That's a tweak. That's a spin on one. You'll find when you do a car insurance quote, if you use, you know, credit score checking tools, you'll see a soft search land on your credit profile. That's because insurers look at your credit score. It's not the only rating factor, but things that improve your credit score, like being on the electoral roll, also improve how reliable you look to an insurer.
Amazing.
So definitely do that.
And what about tweaking your title? I saw this that there are going to be various descriptors of the work that you actually do. So we're not still talking tweaking your title to do a job that you don't do. But let's say, for example, I saw that one said if you write artist or illustrator, that could have a difference. Now, obviously, you could be an artist and an illustrator. That is a very kind of conceivable thing to have happened. So is this something that's allowed and is this something you recommend?
Yes and yes. So you're right. Don't make up a job and say you're an astronaut if you're an artist. But definitely have a look at the options that fit your profile. You don't want to do loads and loads and loads of quotes, but have a little look at the different job titles. And as long as it is one that accurately reflects your job, because, you know, it's not an infinite list, go for the one with the lowest premium. It's going to be different for different insurers. So run, you know, a couple of quotes with the different versions that could fit your job as accurately as you can, because it's always best guess. And you'll probably find that one has slightly cheaper premiums.
Real. I love it. A bunch of hacks. And I think that one thing's also worth mentioning, because people might be annoyed at this idea they have to switch and then switch and then switch and then switch every single year. Once you have the offers on the table, you can always just give a call to your current provider and tell them, this is the quote I've got, beat it or I'm out. And that's a very kind of reasonable way. It's a negotiation at the end of the day, isn't it? There's no kind of hard and set price. It's not like walking into a shop and buying something.
Definitely. It depends if you're more time poor or cash poor, to be honest, which way you want to do. But we definitely know that that's the way that drivers save money. Like, insurers can't always beat the price they gave you originally. But if you've got the time to ring them up, you can definitely have a go, see what they can do. And then it's worth thinking, do you want to go through that? Some insurers, you know, you can log on one button, cancel your policy, and you'll save more time just switching. And maybe you'll get some rewards or benefits. But if you want to stick with the same insurer, give them a ring.
Voila, I like it. Cash poor or time poor. Those are kind of the options. Well, Louise, thank you so much for your time. Really invaluable advice. And I think that hopefully if you can listen to that in full, digest what she said and write it down and actually apply it next time you renew your car insurance, you'll be saving a significant amount of money. So thank you again, Louise, for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
Cheers. Bye. Amazing. Well, next, we normally talk about a money tip of the week, but I feel like you've just had like 100 thrown at you. So I'm going to try and come in from a different angle. Or no, in fact, it's not a different angle. I suppose it's just kind of more in the same, something that we didn't discuss. So this week's money tip of the week, we spoke about comparison websites for saving your car insurance. But one thing that you should also take a look at just before you renew your car insurance is cashback sites. Now, I only found out about this recently when I was reading up on the article. And it turns out that a lot of insurance providers are listed on some of the top cashback sites. So Google the best cashback sites, go through the various providers. And you might find, you know, by paying through their website, you can save 10, 15, 20% or whatever it is. And that might actually be a better alternative to going through the comparison website. So just really cover your ground. And again, it's whether you're cash poor or time poor, as to the amount of detail you're going to be going into for this. But that's just a second option to you. But hopefully, like I said, if you take on any of that advice that Louise shared just then, you're going to be saving a significant amount of money when it comes to insurance, specifically car insurance. Amazing. Well, that's it for this segment. And coming up after the short break, I'm going to be joined by the amazing Anna Sophie Hotfigson. She is the co-founder of Female Invest. It's a discussion you will not want to miss. See you then.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hey!
FUBAR Radio presents
Access All Areas.
Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going through your head when you put that? I'm going to shave off 10 years.
A 26. Third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told him? Probably not.
No. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running round.
Except like, you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 98.
I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Politics Uncensored.
Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience, and I was very pleased we did it. We wrote, the office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it's really necessary for them to come.
The Dating Show.
I'm friends with a fair few sort of exes, and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that it's timing is everything with that.
Well, I think it depends what you cast as a friend.
Yeah,
are you talking about someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, isn't that a bit weird?
Think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level. You can be friends with someone. You can't be, like, best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. I am super excited to introduce you to our next guest. I have Anna Sophie Hotfigson, the co-founder of Female Invest, which is, I believe, a community, a movement and an app as well to help females become more confident and empowered with personal finances, not just investing, but obviously investing is in the name, in the title, so it's a core part of what they do. Firstly, thank you so much for coming. It's amazing to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And I think I just need to start from the beginning. What inspired you to start Female Invest? And can you explain maybe a little bit more about what and who Female Invest are?
Definitely. So Female Invest, we are a global learning platform teaching women everything they need to start managing their money and begin investing. The founding story is actually quite funny. So I come from a background where no one invests, no one talks about money. The same goes for my co-founders. Still started investing quite early. I started investing when I was 19 years old, working as a full-time waitress. Started doing pretty well. Started outperforming the market, became a day trader for a few years. Met my co-founders, decided to start just a small community for other women. We thought we would be like 15 to 20 women, and then it absolutely blew up. And today we help more than 500,000 women manage their money.
That's insane. 500,000 women are managing their money through kind of your services. That is brilliant. And how long ago did this start? When did you launch Female Invest?
So we launched it as a passion project in 2017, but we were still studying. We just did in-person events, had more than 25,000 women at those. Then we turned it into a business in 2019, went full-time in 2020, and the rest is history.
That's incredible. And you're saying that this has all been, in a way, self-taught. So you said you didn't come from anywhere that kind of educated you on the subject. So what sparked that interest? You said you started investing quite young. How did you fall into that world?
So I never had an interest in investing, but I always had an interest in money and the freedom and the power that comes with money. So that was really the motivation. And then when I learned that the money in my bank account was losing value because of inflation, I just knew I had to do something. And both me and my co-founders all worked in the financial industry. My one co-founder is a certified stockbroker. The other one did commodity trading. I was briefly trading pension schemes here in the UK. So we all had experience as well. Wrote a global bestseller too, Girls Just Wanna Have Funds.
That's pretty impressive. And I'd love to know, what are the biggest struggles that you find women approaching your community with? So I assume they've heard about you, they understand this is going to help them with their money. But I'm assuming there's always that question first, like, what's their hesitancy and what are they asking for help with?
So most women just want help with getting started. How much money do you need? What should you invest in? What are the main pitfalls? So that's what we help with. And ironically, even though a lot of women are afraid, you know, that they do something wrong, then what we see is that they actually do very well once they do get started.
And why do you think there's this, I suppose, narrative that women invest less than men? What's going on here, I suppose, in perhaps history, but even today, I assume the statistic still holds true, regardless of, like you said, 500,000 people that you have kind of helped try to counterbalance that statistic in the first place. But what's holding them back and what's the cause root of it?
So it's rooted in history, as you say, like the financial systems are built by and for men. Like, it's not even that long ago that women legally weren't allowed to invest. Yes. Or legally weren't allowed to trade professionally. And so we see that the financial industry, from the communication to the products to the environment at their workplaces, just aren't built for women. And that's reflected in the numbers, where we see that women just don't engage. And it's actually pretty crazy when you look at the facts today. We see that women still get worse terms when they get loans in the bank. And yeah, just a lot of other things that keep women.
That's crazy, because you kind of feel like it's in the past, like it's history. Like, we assume that everyone's now on a level playing field. And you're saying even today, that kind of history has seeped its way into the products, the services, an entire industry, whether we recognize it or not. And I kind of want to then know, on the flip side, how can men help bring more women and change the environment to make it, like we said, this level playing field? Because when I think about money and investing, I don't associate a gender with it. I just associate it as being a necessity to just growing up as an adult. So what can be done to change, like you said, a problem that still exists today?
So the first thing is recognizing the problem. I think it goes for all of the societal inequalities that we have. So recognizing it and then accepting that women don't have to do it the same way to do it equally good. I think those are the first steps, and just encouraging, you know, the women around you, talking with them. You probably noticed, and this is very well proven by research as well, that the way we talk about women and money often has a lot of stereotypes, you know, portraying women as being spenders and men as being investors, for example. So there's a lot that we can do even in the way that we speak about money.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I love the idea of kind of breaking the financial taboo in the first place, because there's definitely an issue in the way that we speak about money, but I think there's an issue in just speaking about money in general.
Yeah.
It's such an avoided topic that I suppose when it is spoken about it, it's such an uncomfortable terms that, for example, you might not want to speak about it with your partner or with a parent or with all these kind of things, and the way that the conversation is going to happen. So I think, like you said, firstly, get comfortable with talking about it, and then B, really think about the way that you are talking about it in the first place and changing your language. I'd love to know, because you said you built this in 2017. So where are we now? 7 years down the line. Incredible that you've kind of come this far. Are there differences between the way that you've noticed women and men treat money, and in particular investing, I want to ask?
Yes, so men and women behave quite differently when it comes to investing, and also very well backed by research. So on average, women are better investors. Actually, they achieve better returns. And when we look at why, we see that the difference in behavior is mainly because women tend to be more long-term. They tend to be less emotional when investing because they don't act based on, you know, short-term trends. And just for all of the ladies who are considering if it's worth it for them to invest, I just want to say that investing is not just about money. It's freedom, power, and independence. And as women, we are educated like never before. We have more money like never before. And if we start using that as power and, you know, invested in companies and causes we care about, we really can change the world.
That's incredible. And I'd love to know then, so if I'm a woman listening to this and I hear about the incredible work you guys are doing and I approach you guys, what is it that you offer? So how can you take me from zero to hero with my money? What's the kind of step process that you show?
We've built the product we wish someone would have built for us. So it's courses taking you through everything from what stocks are and how the stock market works, even how you make a budget, and then all the way up to an advanced investor taking you through all of the topics from retirement to sustainable investing and so on. And then we mix courses, webinars, community. We have a trading simulator so you can practice. So basically all the tools you need, templates as well.
I love that because you're right. It's not just about like, well, you said it earlier, actually, the idea that investing is just about money. It's not. It's about, I suppose, even changing your attitude towards money, thinking long term, thinking about your future self, trying to reward your future self over your current self and taking that kind of gapped approach. And I loved all the resources that you built. So 500,000 women. Do men ever try and get in? Are there, because I'm assuming the resources you have on there are second to none, and they would be relevant to anyone that's interested in money. How many men have tried to break into Female Invest?
Quite a lot, actually. And it's really funny because when we do in-person events, we often have like one or two men showing up, and they always look a bit like, you know, like they feel out of place, even though they are welcome. Mm-hmm. But when we look at the online numbers, we can see that between 5% and 8% of our users are men who just also want to learn, and we're really happy about that.
That's amazing. Because just because it's in the title, I suppose, that doesn't mean that it's not completely relevant to men. I mean, there might be some specific things that you talk about that are gender specific. Mm-hmm. But I suppose anyone needs this information, right? So if this is the right source, 100%, that's great. And I feel like more men should be showing up to the in-person events as well. So what does one find out at these in-person events? Because you kind of broke through what the app does and the different things there. What conversations are you having in person and where are they? When can someone actually attend?
Yeah, so we're going to have two events in May here in London, but the in-person events are more just about community. We have really, really cool speakers sharing their journeys, lots of champagne. So it's really just about feeling that movement of financial female empowerment. And then the app is where you then go and learn and start making the change.
Amazing. I feel like I love champagne, so I'll...
You should join them.
You come for the money, but you stay for the champagne, right? That's the exactly. way the way to do it. Right at the beginning, you spoke about writing a book, mm-hmm. if I'm correct. Can I ask you to share a little bit about what the book is about in the first place?
Yeah, so we wrote the perfect guide for anyone who wants to take control over their finances. The motivation was we realized that the vast majority of finance books out there are written by men and therefore also implicitly for men. And when you go into a bookstore and you look at those shelves, there just aren't really any female authors. So we decided to write a book. We called it Girls Just Want to Have Funds. We pitched it to loads of publishers. No one wanted it in the beginning, but we got it out. And today it's a global bestseller. It's a Sunday Times bestseller. Hillary Clinton, Emma Watson has it. We sold over 80,000 copies, which is crazy to think about in a year.
And you wrote that with your two co-founders,
yes.
Three people writing a book. That couldn't have been easy in and of itself. How did you find that challenge?
It actually wasn't that hard because we really had something to say and we knew for years what we wanted to say. So it was just getting it out on paper. And I think it's amazing when you really have motivation what you can do because we did it next to running the company as well. Looking at the time, I don't know how it all added up, but it did.
Incredible. I feel like writing a book on your own is hard, but in a way, I feel like writing it with three of you together adds a level of complexity. Obviously, ease you can maybe split the challenges out, but complexity because it's three voices trying to come together to speak to one person at a time. So that's really impressive. So, like we said, you're 7 years down the line now. What are the biggest impacts that you've seen through your community, aside from, I suppose, the number of women that are becoming empowered investors and becoming more empowered with their just journeys related to money? Are there any other really big changes you've noticed?
So what makes me really happy, apart from all of the individual stories you mentioned, is that we're starting to see things change on a broader level. We're starting to see, you know, the formulations we put out there, you know, the stories we put out there being told back to us, you know, by the media, by experts, by bigger groups within our community, by companies that we worked with. And that just really shows me that people also internalize some of the messaging we try to get across. And that's when I really feel that big impact is happening.
I love that. Like you said, you're now seeing on a macro level, there are actually changes taking place in society. And is this specifically the UK or are you seeing it internationally?
So we actually have paying members in more than 120 countries. Crazy. Like we are growing so fast organically in countries like France, Italy, Switzerland, Germany without doing anything. And I think it just speaks to the need of financial education for women. You know, we see women find us often through social media. They get obsessed with the product. They tell their friends and it spreads like wildfire.
That's how many countries did you say?
More than 120. It goes somewhere between 122 and 28.
I don't even think I can list 120 countries off the top of my head. That's incredible that you've created something that crosses languages. Like it's a multi-language. It's numbers at the end of the day, right? And it affects every single one of us and whether we like it or not. So that's very impactful. And I can't think of anything else that has impacted that many countries and speaks to that many people. Seeing as you are also, I suppose, the expert and you're the person that's delivering these lessons and building them out. If I'm sitting here, especially to like the young women that are sitting here, maybe they've just finished university or just starting university, what are the key things that they should be thinking about? Or, you know what, scrap that, anyone, it doesn't matter, man, woman, whatever, that they should be thinking about the moment they start earning money for the first time to help them, like you said, build this dream financial life.
Yeah, so what anyone needs to do, regardless of age, background and so on, is to get started taking action. We see a lot of people thinking they need more money, they need more time, they need more knowledge before they can start. But we like to think that you learn through action as well. And if you don't know how to manage £100, you won't know how to manage £100,000. So yeah, start, make a budget. You know, we like to say you should divide it into present you for fixed expenses and savings, and then future you for investing.
I like that, this idea of just starting. I often say to people, they ask me, but like, I don't earn enough to start investing. And I say to them, like, forget like the numbers at the end of the day. Well, that's not the aim of it. The idea is the habit, right? And the muscle. Because what, like you said, once you start earning a number that you say is a significant amount to start investing, you're not gonna be able to cross that barrier because it's gonna be too much of a risk, or it's gonna be, you're starting from a beginner stage. Where if, let's say, you were doing £5, £10, £15 a week, A, numbers wise, it does make a difference. It's actually scary how, like, if you start early, however small the numbers are, the dramatic changes they can make. But secondly, like you were saying, the habit that it can build so that when you are kind of ready to hit go and pour more funds in, you actually have the capacity to do that. So I really like that. And what changes are you hoping for in the future? So you're 7 years in, like you said, you've impacted 500,000 women and men that are part of the community as well. What's next for Female Invest?
What's next for us is to start launching the products that you need to manage money. So the next step is to launch our own trading platform. And we actually did something very grown up, which is that we bought another company not too long ago. We bought a company that has a trading platform, hired the guy who built it. Now we launched the first version, which is a trading simulator. So real stocks, fake money. And I will soon plug in a license so you can actually start trading. And then we'll do it different to anything you've seen out there. Will make it possible to invest with your values so you can see the split between your values and your investments. We'll incorporate a charity component and then everything you need for a great investment platform.
Wow. So if you're really thinking about the one-stop shop, is this going to be in the app?
Yes.
So everything that you need, the lessons are there. You can then go and invest on there. You can do it in, like you said, in a completely different way to any other app is offering. That's really exciting. Is this something that you're teasing to your members? Do they know this is coming? Are they demanding it from you guys?
Overwhelming demand. I'm like stressed out from opening my inbox and seeing people asking for it. So yes, it is. And we actually, I just told your social media manager, we're in the middle of fundraising right now. And we will most likely be doing a crowdfund as well so our community can get on board. Because it just feels right. You know, we've seen explosive growth in the business. We've grown so much. We're a big team. We're a global business. But we also just are a community and we want to take them on board as well. So it's coming soon as well.
I'm kind of excited. I think I mean, you know now that you can have as many stocks and shares, ISA pots as you want. I'm ready. I've invested this year into my one, but I'm ready to open another one if that's what you guys are offering. Because that sounds really interesting and a really new dynamic. And in terms of, I suppose, the goal for the amount of people you want to reach, I feel like when you started this, 500,000 wasn't on your radar. Like you said, you wanted maybe a room full of 15, 20 people. And in that first, what was it, first year or few years, you had got 25,000 people. What's the limit? What's the goal for you guys?
We aren't done until women are financially equal to men in every country in the world. So we'll be working for a very long time.
Well, hopefully not on the other side.
Yeah. I hope not, but I think we will.
Yeah, no, that's really exciting and really amazing. And I suppose I'd love to ask you again, like you're in the personal finance world. I've quizzed you a lot on kind of the specific work that you do. But for anyone listening here today that just wants to improve any area of their personal finances, what's one thing that you wish you could tell them? Well, you can because they're listening.
One very easy, super low effort thing that anyone can do is to start automating the basics of their finances. And what I mean here is that you first, of course, you know, sort your finances out, you make a budget, and then you, in the budget, figure out how much you can afford to save and or invest every month. And then you automate it so that you automatically transfer money from your salary account into your savings or investment account. And then from your investment account, you can also automate your buy orders so that you automatically, every single month, invest even just a small amount in something that you've pre-selected. And I've done that for 11 years now, and it's been an absolute game changer. Even though I've been a student, even though I had years where it was small amounts, it really adds up in the long run.
And I'm going to add something to that as well, because that's a brilliant piece of advice. But do it first. Do it the moment the money comes in. Automate future use savings and investments straight away. Because if you leave it to what's left at the end, I can already tell you there's nothing's going to be left at the end. That's exactly. Just the way we work. No, that is incredible. Thank you so much. I think that our listeners have learned an immense amount. And just because they might have missed it at the start, where can people find Female Invest if they do want to join the community?
They can find us everywhere in App Store, our app, our website, or social media, especially Instagram.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining today. It was a really incredible chat.
Thank you for having me.
Amazing. So that was Anna. Anna Sophie Hartvigsen, the co-founder of Female Invest, who, I mean, is absolutely awe-inspiring. I think you can all agree when it comes to this idea of promoting investing and making it accessible for everyone, because there really aren't any excuses when it comes to that topic. Like I said, it's a habit. So if you don't think you have enough, there's an answer for that. Start small. If you don't think you know enough, there's an answer for that. There are resources online. If you don't trust investing enough, again, it's the idea of doing something small, something that you're willing to kind of balance your risk tolerance. So that's kind of there are so many lessons there, and I hope that you actually do go back and listen to that again and again and again, because I'm pretty much going to be doing the exact same thing. That brings us nicely on to scam of the week. So, like I said, I like to take a little peruse through the deep dark web to look at what's going on in terms of scams, what's happening online, what's happening in the market, and all this kind of stuff. And this one isn't even a scam. It's just things to kind of be aware are happening so that you can kind of counterbalance them, or, like, you know, be aware. So this isn't a scam per se, but I can't remember the exact age range, but I believe if you were born somewhere in the region of 2000 to 2011, I want to say, please double check it, but look up something called child trust funds. I believe that there are still somewhere in the region of 60% of these unclaimed. And this is a small amount of money that the government put aside for people born in that kind of age range that you can access once you turn 18. And I'm assuming most people are now turning 18 and will have these accounts and will have no idea that they've got them in the first place. Just Google child trust funds if you were born in and around the years, I want to say 2000 to 2011. I might be completely off with those numbers, but you know what? Just had it in my ear. 2002 to 2011. I want you to, it's not a scam, but it's the idea that there is missing money out there that you're not being told about. And to me, that kind of is a scam, even though, like, you're not losing out, but you're just gaining. It's like the opposite of a scam. I don't know what the word is for it, but yeah. My kind of tip of the week for that is to please go look it up if you're born between 2002 and 2011 and find the money that you are owed. Once you turn 18, I believe it's all yours. And that brings us nicely onto audience questions. So, I'm going to keep saying this every single time, but there are so many questions to do with money that we are so embarrassed to answer, to ask even in the first place. You know, you think that like you should have learned this during school, or by the time you're an adult, you should really know this stuff. So you just keep quiet, which means that you'll keep making the mistake. But this is the show. This is the part of the show where we can anonymously get those things off of our chest and ask the questions that we've always wanted to know. And we've had a few last week. Remember, you can DM at That Money Show, or if you're watching live, you can ask it here and now, a question, anything about money, and I will answer it. But I'm going to answer some from last week firstly. Polly has asked, do you have any advice for paying off debt? I do. And remember, I'm not a financial advisor, so please always look into your own personal circumstances. But when it comes to debt in general, there are two main thought processes. There is pay it off the snowball route or pay it off the avalanche route. I can't remember which one's which. I think the avalanche route is this. The avalanche route is you take the smallest debt you have. So let's say you've got a £30 debt and a £100 debt, and you pay the £30 one off first, and then you pay off the £100 debt, and so on and so forth. So you start small, you get that psychological win, and then you pay off the £100, you get that psychological win, and you can move on to the next one, and you keep wiping debts off. Whereas the snowball route is based off of interest rates. So it's the most mathematically optimal way to pay off your debt. And what I mean by that is, if one has got a 10% interest rate, regardless of how much you owe, and another one has a 5% interest rate, you pay off the one with a 10% interest rate first. Now, there's a huge debate amongst the personal finance community as to which of these two methods is the right method to use when it comes to paying off debt. And here's what I'm going to tell you. This might be controversial. It just doesn't matter. I mean, most people stay, like, will kind of hesitate paying off debt longer and longer because they don't know the right way to do it. There's a personal preference. One is mathematically optimal. One is psychologically optimal. Okay? They both have different strengths. Don't wait because you're not sure which one is the right one. Start paying off your debt aggressively. That is the only answer that is correct. Now, there is some caveats, and I know that I've answered this question a little longer, so I'm not going to be able to do as many questions in this section. But there is a thing called high interest debt and low interest debt, which I think is really vital to understand the difference between. For example, you might have been that lucky person that secured a mortgage 3 or 4 years ago when mortgage rates were less than 2%. Now, I'm not telling you that you need to aggressively pay off that debt. Of course, to be mortgage free would be a wonderful thing. But that would qualify itself as a low interest debt. Whereas on the flip side, a credit card, normally they have interest rates of 20, 30. I'm fairly certain the highest one right now is there's an Amex card with over 700% APR. I mean, don't get me started on that. But the whole idea for that is that that would be considered high interest debt, right? And there's kind of a magic number in the middle. For me, that number is about 7%. It ranges for a few people. It's normally somewhere between 6 and 8%. And what the kind of personal finance analogy is if your interest rate is above the magic number, so for me, 7. So if my interest rate is 8, 9, 10, 11%, I pay it off aggressively. If that number is below 7%, I can make minimum payments with a caveat. That doesn't mean that if I have extra money to pay off the debt that has a less than 7% interest rate, I can go and spend that and, you know, go shopping and go eat, like get some takeaway. That money still has to go towards future version of myself through concepts like investing, because the average return from investing that I am aiming to get is 8, 9, 10%, higher than that 7%, which is why I'd rather put my money in that route. So I hope I haven't confused you. The first thing answer was there is two ways to pay off debt, avalanche and snowball. Just pick one and go with it. Start paying off your debt aggressively. And the second thing to be aware of is the idea of high interest debt and low interest debt. The idea is to pay off your high interest debt as quickly as possible. And your low interest debt, if you want to invest that money instead, that is another possible route. I've got time for one more really quick question. Kevin asks, what exactly is a credit score and why does it matter? I don't know why I picked that as a really quick question. I don't know what I was thinking. But credit scores, in essence, are your trustworthiness to a bank or anyone that's going to lend you money. They'll take a look at your credit score. It gives you a number. And they're like, oh, this guy is really trustworthy. How do they factor it in? Well, that's if you've got any missed payments on credit cards or kind of loans that you've been lent out. If you've defaulted on anything, that's going to negatively impact your credit score. If you're not on the electoral roll, negatively impact your credit score. If you've got bank accounts under loads of different addresses, again, like, going to lower your credit score. So just a few things, making sure you're paying off your credit card in full. every single month is going to be one of the strongest things to improve your credit score. So zero debts in that front. Making sure all your banks are registered to the right address. Again, going to be really strong to your credit score. And why does it matter? Well, a low credit score can get you denied from certain financial services and products. So you want to get a mortgage. Some people get denied a mortgage because they've got a bad credit score. And you might be able to get a better interest rate on your mortgage if you've got a good credit score. So good credit score equals good. We want it. It does matter. It is important. So just think about it and make sure that you're always working towards that kind of goal. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. I want to say thank you to both of our guests, Louise and Anna Sophie, two incredible guests. We've learned a lot from both of them about car insurance and about Female Invest. We also obviously broke down a lot of what was going on in the news. But I just want to remind everyone that if you do want to listen to this every single week, we're on every social media platform where you can DM us your kind of the questions you're most wanting to know about the topic of money at That Money Show. And we will bring them in to next week's show and answer them right there. And then you can also download the FUBAR app and listen live every single week. And you will be able to listen back to this show on all good podcasting platforms. So you find the one you use anyway. I'll be there in your ear. Thank you so much. This has been That Money Show. I am That Money Guy. And we'll catch you next week for another incredible show, incredible guests, and to get better with our money. Simple as. See ya.